cold-blooded murder is making Mortal Kombat the most popular video game in history. Kids relish their victory and their bloody choice. Should they pull out their opponent's heart, or simply rip his head off just to see his spinal cord dangle in a pool of blood?
How do you feel about cutting his head off?
After a $10 million advertising campaign, Mortal Kombat, debuting in home video today, is expected to sell 2 million copies at $50 a pop.
Welcome, everyone, to the N-Express podcast. I'm on site's one and only Nintendo podcast from Montreal. I am one of your hosts. My name is Ricky D. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Aaron Santos.
Hello.
Now, we will not be joined by Tim today because we don't know where he is. So we're assuming he's having some kind of internet technical difficulty. But joining us is special guest Quentin Danglade, who is Aaron's co-host of the FTW podcast. Welcome to the show for the very first time, Quentin.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you for coming on. Now, Quentin, I don't know if you've listened to the show in the past, but for first-time guests, we always ask them five questions. It's sort of like an icebreaker just to kind of ooze us into the conversation. Are you ready for your first five questions?
Yes, I am.
Say first five because we're going to ask you more questions along the podcast, but these questions are aimed and directed towards you as a person, your personality, and your interests. I'm told that you're a huge fan of Sega. What would you say is the most overrated video game Sega's ever released?
Most overrated video game? I would say the Shining Heart series, or the Shining series. It's an RPG. I never really got to get into it. Never really liked it too much. But yeah.
Okay, it's one of those franchises that's beloved by many Sega fanatics. What would you say is the most underrated game Sega has ever created, developed, produced, released?
Vector Man.
See, a good one. Vector Man's pretty underrated. But I would like to say probably Golden Axe. Golden Axe series or Streets of Rage. Either one of those two.
You actually think Streets of Rage is underrated?
Yeah, man. I'm still waiting on fourth Streets of Rage. I loved that growing up as a little kid. I loved Streets of Rage.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Quentin thinks it's underrated because it seemed overshadowed by the one on the Super Nintendo. Final Fight.
Yeah, Final Fight. There was a whole bunch of beat 'em ups actually. Yeah. But Streets of Rage, I loved it, man. Love to see more of it.
Streets of Rage was recently re-released on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe it's just within my circle of friends when I was growing up, but we all loved that game. Like, I was more of like a Nintendo fanatic, and I really didn't like Sega too much, but I really liked Streets of Rage. I like Sega for their beat-em-ups, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay, question number three. If you can choose two video games to last you till the end of time, given that every single other video game would be destroyed, what two video games do you think you can take with you until the day you die that you can continuously play and enjoy for years and years and years?
Oof. Wow. could they be online games?
Yeah.
Okay, I would like to put one of them as Elder Scrolls of Skyrim.
Okay, so it's a good pick. Open world
or Oblivion.
Yeah, I see. Open worlds are always a good pick because it's an open world. You can always replay and find different possibilities and different characters and different storylines.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And the last one, I would have to go with Phantasy Star Online 2.
Why?
I'm pretty embarrassed to say this, but in the past like 3 years, I put in over 1,400 hours of that game.
You know what? I'm surprised you didn't say Shenmue, actually. I thought for sure you were going to say Shenmue.
Nah, you can't play Shenmue.
You see, it's weird because I think I would have to choose a sports game. Which sports game? I'm not entirely sure. Would it be an NHL game? An NBA game? Most likely an NBA game.
NFL 2K5.
Yeah, something
like that. Oh, I could play that one for...
I mean, if I had to choose two, I would have to choose an open world and a sports game.
True.
Yeah.
All right. Question number four. If you can produce any movie based on a video game, what would you adapt?
Whoa. That's a good one. I would say Metal Gear Solid.
Into a movie.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a good pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what do you prefer, console gaming and or PC gaming?
This is a weird question because I'm a console gamer at heart, but in the past year, I've been edging towards PC gaming a lot more. And I've been going towards PC releases over a console release.
Now, is that due to the price, the availability?
I would say the price, how easy it is to get a lot of games on PC. It's like, just type it in, download it off Steam, off whatever outlet you have, you know, and
for ridiculous prices.
Yeah, and consoles, it's a lot harder. You have to go out, you gotta look for it, and I would have to say PC right now.
See, I really want to ask Tim this question, and maybe we can ask him next week, because he does not like PC gaming. I'm sort of like in between. I prefer console gaming, playing video games in the living room with my family. Like I played Badass Elephant, which we're going to talk about in our middle segment, with my nephew, you know, and that was total fun. And I can't imagine having that same sort of atmosphere, having a bunch of people huddled in front of a computer. And even though I have like a big screen, it still does not feel the same. And you don't necessarily keep your computer, your desktop in your living room, right?
Yeah.
But Steam has so many games and they are so cheap. But that said, I like to actually own the physical copy. So I'm like, you know, it's tough.
But you see, you see Steam now is bridging the gap for having PCs in your living room with the Steam Box. And there's that little gadget that it's not out yet, but I'm forgetting what it's called. It was like a little sort of like wireless hub that you plug into your TV, which you could stream games onto it from your PC in your office, let's say.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I already do that. So when we're playing Tembo the Badass Elephant this weekend, basically my nephew came over with his laptop because I have a Mac and it's not available on Mac, that game. And so I downloaded the game on my account, but on his computer. And then we hooked up his laptop to my big screen in the living room and hooked it up to the speakers and whatnot. So, and we have a controller. So it felt like we were playing a game on like my Wii U, but it just so happened to be on his laptop. And in fact, my niece came over and she walked in and she watched us play this game. And the whole entire time she thought we were playing on the Wii U. So yeah, totally. I totally agree. And I actually kind of want to get one of those boxes and or the actual Steam console. Because I like the idea of being in my living room on my couch with a controller in my hand, not a keyboard, not in my bedroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing with PC gaming. I'm not a keyboard and mouse player.
Yeah, we criticize him a lot on the podcast about that.
Yeah, personally, if I can't play the game with a controller, then I probably won't like it.
Yeah. Hey man, I'm exactly like you. I will not play a game unless I have a controller. No way. I'm not using no keyboard and mouse, okay? Long gone are days when I played games like King's Quest, okay? Leisure Suits Larry. I don't need to be playing on a keyboard anymore. You can easily buy a controller and hook it up to your PC.
What? Leisure Suit Larry is just point and click.
Yeah, but still, like, I just don't want to be hunched over and on a keyboard. Even though I have a wireless keyboard I can put on my lap, I just don't want a keyboard. A keyboard's the type. I can play video games.
Yeah. Even with the Telltale games, like I still use my controller over using the keyboard.
Really?
And mouse, yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I don't know. I always found myself as being like such an omni player. Like I could play it on just about anything. It's just that lately, this past year, I found myself more accustomed to using a keyboard than a controller. I found.
Yeah. So. Well, I guess it's because you're used to it, like you said, you're accustomed to it, but I just prefer controller. So this will lead into our Nintendo Dosage segment. Just quickly want to ask, do you guys think it's possible that Nintendo will ever go the Valve route in the sense that we will be able to play Nintendo games on our home computers and maybe also on console? Like, do you think that that is a possibility, for example, with the NX? Like having some sort of console that you can hook up to the internet and download games like you would Steam and maybe access on your Wii U and on your 3DS where it links each and every single console via the internet? Is that a possibility? Because I know Nintendo's huge fans of Valve.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a possibility. I mean, like you said already, that they've already praised the concept that Valve is doing. And I feel like not just Nintendo, but maybe other Sony or Microsoft could go that route in the future too. Who knows?
I think that, yes, they will eventually get there, and it'd be the best thing for a virtual console. But, yeah, for the moment, no, I don't see them doing it, but in the future, yes.
Really? You don't think, like, with the NX, is just going to be, like, all just online?
I really do think that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think they're going to create some sort of network, mm-hmm. which is going to combine every single Nintendo game released for every single console in one platform, digital platform.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine you can access any game from the NES, Super Nintendo, the 64, the GameCube, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like we talked about this briefly last week, I don't see Nintendo abandoning the touchscreen philosophy, the gamepad and or 3DS, because some of their biggest games over the past, say, like 10 years have relied on touchscreen. And two of their biggest games this year, Super Mario Maker and Splatoon,
mm-hmm.
rely on touchscreen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that whatever they do with the NX moving forward, they're always going to find a way to adapt these games, because Nintendo's always been a huge supporter of backwards compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have some kind of like touchscreen system that you can adapt to the NX, then they're going to lose out big time, especially if two of their biggest games coming out this year rely on touchscreen. So I think what they're going to try to do is they're going to find a way to incorporate everything into like one giant console.
I would love that. But for the past year, I've owned a Wii U for almost about a year, and I've actually really loved the fact that there is that touchscreen. And yeah, I would like to see it come back.
Well, and also the ability to play off TV. I thought that was a really,
and that too.
That was a great feature.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a reason why I think that if they do have a console, which, you know, you can access these games that you purchase on your laptop or computer, or the NX itself is maybe like a mobile device, sort of like the 3DS. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure what they're going to do, but I think they're going to try to find ways to incorporate all of these ideas into like one system. Because the thing is, recently, I don't know who it was, but someone who worked at Nintendo recently said that the best thing about the Wii U is actually the gamepad, but they just haven't found ways to fully show off or show what it can do. Like,
mm-hmm.
capability. And I think Super Mario Maker is one of the ways they're going to do that. So yeah. I don't think they're going to abandon it anytime soon.
I hope not. I really like that. I really love that controller, actually.
Surprisingly comfortable, too.
Yeah, it is. All right, so that'll end our quick segment here called Nintendo Dosage. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to review Tembo. You're listening to N-Express, the official Nintendo podcast of soundonsite.org.
We'll be right back.
You're back here on NXpress, and you just heard a clip from the new video game called Tembo, the Badass Elephant, developed by Game Freak. Yes, Game Freak, the same company responsible for the Pokemon franchise, and published by Sega.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, Tembo, the Badass Elephant, was one of my most anticipated games of the year. I was so excited to review this game. And in fact, this is going to start a four-week series in which we are going to review a game that's not available on a Nintendo console, but a game that we think should be available on a Nintendo console, be it the 3DS and or the Wii U. This is my pick. I think this game should have been released on the Wii U. Quentin, you're a huge Sega fan. You've played this game. I'm assuming you finished it. What do you think?
At first, I was very curious about this game. I wondered why they didn't go with releasing it on a Nintendo console, or why Nintendo didn't publish it. But hey, Sega published it, and it turned out to be great. And I can't say I was anticipating it, but I was very curious about how the game was going to turn out.
Okay, yeah, I think this game is fantastic. I love this game. And I know some people are lukewarm on it because they say that it starts off really, really great and then slowly loses steam, especially towards like the last, say, two levels.
Mm-hmm.
Not the last two levels. Would you call it the last two levels or the last two maps? Well, it's technically one map. The map is this giant peanut.
Yeah.
This is how they... Like section, well, they call them zones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of like the Sonic the Hedgehog,
right?
Series, but yeah, I guess each zone is its own thing, and then in each zone there's stages.
So it does sort of lose steam towards the end of the game, like especially when you get to the last zone. But I do think this game is so damn fun, and I do find it shocking that a game that's developed by Game Freak, once again, the company responsible for Pokemon, okay,
which has been like exclusive to Nintendo for like the longest time
since ever,
yeah,
didn't release this game on the Wii U. And honestly, this is the quote I found on the internet from the game developer. They said, James Turner, director and character designer at Game Freak, said, "When I was writing the presentation documents for this game, I drew up a mock-up poster. And I put the Steam, PlayStation, and Xbox logos at the bottom. It seemed to fit and happened to stick that way."
Hmm.
That was his explanation. Because he designed a poster and for whatever reason didn't put Nintendo or the Wii U logo on the poster.
Because Nintendo and Wii U was not aesthetically pleasing to the poster? Is that what I'm taking away from it?
No idea. If I were Sonic the Hedgehog, I would be really worried right now. Because...
Yeah.
After a string of flops and terrible games, Sega's mascot, like this is Sonic, Sega's mascot, has basically been replaced by Tembo. Because this game is so similar to the gameplay of Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, sure, the characters are completely different. You know, in this case, you're playing with this badass elephant who happens to join the military. But the gameplay is so similar to Sonic the Hedgehog, and it's like people that developed this game not only tried to imitate the gameplay of Sonic the Hedgehog, but they realized Sonic's greatest flaws and fixed it.
Ooh, I wouldn't say that. I would like to say that all of the 2D Sonic games that came out on the Game Boy Advance and the DS, they were all flawless. Like, I would like to say all the 2D games, they were all on point. It's the 3D games that just are bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, I mean, Game Freak really did a good job drawing inspiration from all those Sonic games. Like, you see the Sonic the Hedgehog inspiration, a lot of level designs in Tembo.
Yeah. I mean, like
just, really well done.
Yeah, just playing, like, I didn't get much chance to play it. I've only played it, sit down with it for an hour. But just right away, immediately, just in that first zone, I recognize already like the inspirations to Sonic, especially in the level designs too, like how you have like the floating platforms with the fans.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of like Sonic 2, like the which one call it? Was it Act 2? In the metallic
chemical
places.
Plant.
I think so.
Chemical Plant.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of things like really familiar. So I really like that Game Freak like made such I guess you could call it sort of like an homage to like just Sega's past.
Yeah, so I guess what we're talking about here is it really has to do with the gameplay and the controls and the movesets. Mm-hmm. And what I like about Tembo is you're playing this giant elephant. Like, once again, he's in the military. He looks like Rambo. He's wearing this, like, bandana. He's got these headphones on. He's rocking out to whatever music he's listening to. We don't know because whatever. The soundtrack is pretty good for this game, though.
Yeah.
And I love the way you can just break through walls and tear apart the streets and send cars flying. And it's got this comic book style with debris flying everywhere.
Yeah, love it. I love how that looks.
So much fun. It's so much fun when you're dashing in the straight line, butt stomping. It's got the butt stomp move, which also we also have to mention that it does have specific mechanics and gameplay controls from the Super Mario series and the Donkey Kong series.
Yeah.
But I love how you can just destroy everything in your way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to Sonic, like Sonic has his dash. But so does Tembo the elephant. Like, he has a specific kind of dash. And also, you can do, like, this uppercut. Mm-hmm. And each and every single move becomes important. But, yeah, so, you know, we do have a dash. Like, Tembo does have a dash. And you can plow through buildings, pillars, cars, trees, you name it. You know, and he also has a tumbling spin attack, which I think is so awesome because that reminds me a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, and it's kind of like his homing attack, actually.
Yeah. But it's so easy to control this character, which is what I like about the game. Like, I personally am a big fan of games that have easy controls. Like, I don't want to have to spend 20 minutes trying to get accustomed to the controls and or 2 hours. Like, it took me no longer than, like, a minute or two. And they even have a little tutorial at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you sort of want to rush through the level and just destroy everything in sight.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you can go back and replay the level and actually take your time with each level to try to find each and every single person that you have to rescue, because each level has a specific amount of people you can rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about this game is you have to actually kill a certain amount of enemies in order to advance to the next level.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that it's hard, but there are a few levels where you have to kill just about almost every single villain in that level in order to open up the next level.
Yeah, I think they should have left that out, but that's just me. I don't like having that like, oh, you have to find this many enemies and kill this many enemies to advance into the next level. Like,
really?
I'm not a big fan of that in a lot of like games, especially platformers.
Is it because you don't want to replay the level?
Yeah, that's one of the down points I find with Tembo is backtracking.
Mm.
I didn't really enjoy it too much, only with a few levels, but that was because the game it's actually really challenging.
Huh. Because that's kind of what I like about it. Like, that's what I also like about Super Mario games. Like, anyone can play a Super Mario game, but in order to fully complete a Super Mario game, like, you know, get every single star or whatever hidden item, like, it takes a lot of time and you have to be a really amazing player. In this game, like, okay, so yes, you do need a certain amount of enemies that you have to take out and or kill in order to advance to the next level. But I think that with this kind of game, you're going to want to kill just about everyone, because that is what makes the game so fun, is you're playing with this elephant that can destroy everything. Like, there was only one time where I was missing, I think, like 11 people that I had to kill, and I had to go back and replay one of the levels in order to advance because I was missing 11 people.
Mm.
But in terms of, like, the people you have to rescue who are hidden throughout each level, like, you know, if you have, like, 12 or 15 people hidden throughout the levels that if you find, you rescue them, and when you rescue them, they ride on the elephant's back, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But you don't have to find each and every single one of those people.
Does that make sense to you guys, though? Like, when the people are riding Tembo's back, when he does that spinning move, do you notice that they remain stationary? So
no, they don't remain stationary.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if my game was glitching then, but like I noticed, like, every time like Tembo would do that the spinning move, I would see the passengers on his back there, they just like remained still. And then I just kept thinking to myself, I'm like, my God, I felt for the male characters having an elephant spin that fast. It's the only thing I took away from the video after playing it is how it's how hot the guy's crotch would be when he spins. No, but yeah, the game was good. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to play too much of it. I mean, it just plays so much into past video games histories. I mean, like you said, like the comic book effects that it does, it reminded me so much of like this game called Comic Zone. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of that. Reminded me a lot of the art style of it. The military art style reminded me a lot of Metal Slug. So
yeah, it's true.
I mean, there's a lot of things that this game did that's just really for that did justice to past video games.
Also, the art style also has the Saturday morning cartoon vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a kids' TV show. It's called Gravity Falls. It looks almost exactly like the animation in Gravity Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I like about this game. It has so much personality. And just the actual main character, Tembo, like, he's going to be one of those characters that people will love, you know, in the next, like, 5 or 10 years. He's going to be iconic, much in the same way Sonic is and Shovel Knight is and mm-hmm. Super Mario is and so on and so forth. Like, I think, like, you know what? This game is short. Like, it's about 6 hours of gameplay. Like, you can finish this game in 6 hours. But it's the first game in a series. It's not an independent game, but it's not like they shoved out, like, millions of dollars to develop and produce this game, right? Mm-hmm. But this is the start of something big. Like, I really think this game is going to be huge in the future. And if they ever do release this game on a Nintendo platform, it's going to be huge. This is the kind of game they can release physical copies of for the Wii U, and it will sell, like, mm-hmm. millions of copies. I guarantee that if they release this on the Wii U with a physical copy, it would sell at least 1 million copies. There are sections that feel like Rayman.
Yeah.
And then there are sections that feel like Donkey Kong Country. Like, mm-hmm. there's specific parts in the game where you have to jump into a cannon, and the cannon shoots the elephant out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are portions of the game where in which the elephant has to swing on sort of like, I don't know what you would call it, but he would swing.
Well, he would grab a knob and then he's.
Yeah, he would grab his trunk and spin around it.
Yeah.
Would spin around and try to swing your way through the level. Those bits and parts of the game remind me a lot of like Donkey Kong Country.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like I do like the fact that the level design strives for a tricky balance between encouraging you to just rampage and destroy everything in sight, but also to realize that in doing so, you're not saving each and every single person you could save.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if you're a completist, you're going to want to replay the game again to try to, you know, save every single little person and find all little secret treasures and hidden rooms and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's a game that you could play in 6 hours, but if you really wanted to be a completist and go back and play it, I think you will have a lot of fun with the replay value.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Super Mario 3, where, like, 30 years later, we still discover new secrets and hidden treasures and doorways and whatnot, because there's just so much in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think if Nintendo had developed this game, it would be a lot longer, guaranteed. It would have a lot more secrets, a lot more, perhaps, weapons and or villains, like
support.
Exactly. Like, even like the villains, like the bosses, there really isn't much of a big boss in this game. Like, mm-hmm. there's one guy that you know when you get to the Pac-Man stage, the mm-hmm. Pac-Man level, right? And it's like this giant tank. Like, I destroyed him in like a minute. Not even. I'm like, that is the big boss.
Actually, the hardest boss to me was the the wasp thing.
Oh yeah.
I was stuck on that for a few minutes. I wouldn't say an hours, but a few minutes. I was stuck on that, but yeah.
And it's like your typical old school Nintendo game in which each level has a specific theme. So there is like the volcano.
Yeah.
And then there's like the jungle, and then there's one level which is my favorite. It sort of reminds me of like a Toy Factory. Like, it's not a toy factory, but it's a factory, and you go through the factory, and you're on sort of like a conveyor belt, and there's all sorts of enemies trying to kill you, including like enemies who are lit on fire. And and that's the thing about the game. My favorite thing about the game is, in order to destroy the enemies who are lit on fire, you have to drink water and then hose them down with the trunk of the elephant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I really like the a lot of the levels. I really like. There's one in like the second zone where you start off on like a mountain cliff and you go higher and higher until you reach like a mountain of like satellite observatory.
Yeah.
Oh, that just the art style in that level was beautiful in my opinion.
The game, you collect peanuts, and for every 300 peanuts you collect, you get an extra life. Mm. But it's actually quite easy to collect 300 peanuts.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's very easy.
I mean, especially like when you go on like a blitzing rampage, when he starts running, you don't realize how many peanuts you're collecting along the way.
Yeah, and if there are checkpoints, so if you die, you start at the checkpoint, but then you can go back, and you can collect even more peanuts that you've already collected before you start moving forward again. So it's a pretty awesome game. I actually love this game. Like, you know, it's no Bloodborne, but it's my kind of game. You know, if I had to vote on the best video games of the year so far, this would be on my list. I think it's just a blast. Like, it might be short, it might be easy, but I think it's colorful. It's got a great look to it. It's got personality.
Yeah.
And
it has like a really, really good range of like gameplay mechanics to it. Like there's so many things to that Tambo can do, and it's fun to just the way he interacts with the levels too. I thought it was just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, no. Well, it's like combining the power-ups and abilities of like Mario with Sonic and Donkey Kong and giving it to this giant elephant who just happens to be like really fun to play with. So the game is called Tembo, the Badass Elephant. If you've played it, let us know what you think. Once again, you can always find our podcast post over at soundinsight.org. You can listen to our show on Stitcher, on iTunes. And if you do listen to our show, please spread the word, tell your friends about it, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Tumblr. All the links are on our website, and we attach each and every single link to each and every single one of the posts. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Mortal Kombat, both the game and the movie.
And now for a taste of things to come.
Welcome back to NXpress, Sound Insight's official Nintendo podcast. And in our post-game content segment here, we are going to talk about Mortal Kombat. And we're specifically going to talk about the original game, and we are also going to look back at the movie. So first, I just want to talk about the original game. Now, I assume we are all fans of the Mortal Kombat series. Quentin?
Yes, I am.
Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, all right. So the very first Mortal Kombat game, released in early 1990s, the game was on every system, I think.
Yeah.
In every arcade. Sparked controversy, mostly because of the fatalities and the quote-unquote realistic graphics and the blood. It's weird, because nowadays it feels tame. And you got consoles like the Xbox One and the PlayStation who now have games like Mortal Kombat X. And, you know, looking back and just realizing how much commotion this game caused, like, it was not only a huge hit at the arcades and on home consoles, but it was just all over the news. Parents were trying to ban the game. It's just like, it feels like a whole different time and place and world, you know? Now, looking back at the game, like what are your fondest memories? What do you think of this game? Do you think it really changed gaming in terms of like fighting games? Do you think it's overrated? I'll start with Quentin.
Okay, I remember, well, the first time I ever played Mortal Kombat wasn't on Super Nintendo. It was actually on the Sega Genesis, but I'm going to talk about my Super Nintendo experience with the game. My little cousins had a Super Nintendo, and after school, I would go over to their house, and I would finish up my homework super quick so that we could all play, right? And they were really young at the time, like under 5. And yeah.
Hey, who was under 5?
My cousins. I was a lot older. I was like, approaching 10 years old, maybe.
Okay.
And I would finish up my homework super quick so that we could all get to play, you know. And I always remember just constantly giving them beat downs in the game. It turned them into really, really big Mortal Kombat fans.
I thought you were going to say criminals.
Yeah, but at the time, I didn't really realize that there was no blood in the game.
No, not the Super NES version.
Yeah, I didn't notice it.
Well, you had to put the code to get the blood.
Yeah, exactly. And it was only until like I saw codes for the game, and then I was just like, what, really? There's no blood in the game? It's not like the Sega Genesis version?
Mm.
I would go back and play it with them, and I'm like, wow, okay. And So I had a whole bunch of fun with that game. Like, it was probably one of my first fighting games. One of my first games in the genre that I played.
Well, because like Street Fighter, specifically Street Fighter 2, laid the groundwork for fighting games. But Mortal Kombat really put the genre in the mainstream. Like Street Fighter 2 to some degree, but it was like before we just had Street Fighter. And once Mortal Kombat came in, it was like all of a sudden we were getting all of these like crazy fighting games because Street Fighter was such a success. Everyone wanted to like, you know, try to develop their own successful fighting game also. But I actually used to play Mortal Kombat at the arcade all the time. And I had a copy for the Super NES. I was never really bothered by the fact that it didn't have blood. I could care less. Like when it came down to the fatalities and the blood, I was like, as long as you can actually play the game and has the same controls and movements and the fighters had the same finishing moves, I just really didn't care about the lack of blood. But I was always a huge fan of the arcade game. And what I loved about Mortal Kombat, it's one of those games that you can go to your arcade, you can put in like 25 cents or 50 cents, whatever it was, and you can start playing. And as long as someone keeps challenging you and you keep winning, you could keep staying on that arcade. Like you wouldn't have to put back another quarter or two quarters to keep playing. And that's what I liked about it, whereas sometimes you would go play a racing game and you would like finish one track and you would have to put in like another 25 cents or 50 cents, and it was really annoying. Whereas with Mortal Kombat, if you were good, and I was good at the time, I was able to stay on that arcade machine for quite some time with only one quarter, and that's what I loved about it. What about you, Eric?
For me, like the first time I played Mortal Kombat, it was like on the Super Nintendo. Which I did, I owned a Super Nintendo, but I didn't have a copy of Mortal Kombat because my parents would never let me have that one. Yet, God bless my grandfather, though, he bought Mortal Kombat 2 for me on the Sega Genesis, though. But the first time I played Mortal Kombat, it was such a... I was already, like, well introduced in the world of, like, Super Street Fighter 2. I played a lot of fighting games back then, and then I play a game like Mortal Kombat, and then I just see the violence and then the realistic characters. I was just immediately like enamored by the style. So,
well, realistic characters.
the realistic, you know, like the photographic character designs that they use in the game.
Oh yeah, okay.
Like, I mean, let's be real. Like, it was
a high watermark for graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and over the top violence. Like it was. It was something completely ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was something that you... This was a fighting game that's just never been done before. And, I mean, who would not have taken notice of such an interesting look? But most of my time was played in Mortal Kombat 2, actually. When Mortal Kombat 2 came out, that's when I became like such a... almost 24/7 just playing Mortal Kombat 2.
Yeah. Now, if you're a young kid listening to this podcast, you got to understand something. When Mortal Kombat was released, there was no rating system. This game was so controversial that they had Senate meetings.
No, they made a rating system because of this game.
Exactly. The rating system was established because of Mortal Kombat, because it was so controversial. It was all over the news. The government got involved. Parents were complaining. It's without doubt one, if not the most controversial games ever released. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of like its popularity and how many people like actually played it, how many people knew about it. So the thing is, the funny thing about the game is Ed Boon, who developed the game along with John Tobias, they said that they originally had an idea for a video game in which they wanted the character to be voiced and what's the word I'm looking for? And,
fully animated?
After Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Okay.
They basically wanted to make a video game starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. So they wanted a character who looked and moved exactly like Jean-Claude Van Damme with his voice.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. Maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme just didn't want to do it and or whatnot. So they decided to make this fantasy-themed fighting game called Mortal Kombat, which actually does have a story. Mm-hmm. And these characters do have backstories. And there is a world. And there's like within the world, there's like six different planets or wouldn't call it planets, but
it was an alternate realm.
Exactly, realm. Yeah. Would be the best way to call it. But so that's what's interesting about it. Like, although it's a fighting game, it actually does have a story and a storyline. Like, they've released sequel after sequel after sequel, and there is like a timeline and a story that ties in all of these characters together, which I think is really impressive. Like, for a fighting game, like some people might think that's ridiculous, but you know, some fighting games, it's just about having these characters and you play with one character and that's it. It's a fighting game. But this game has its own mythology. Like, it has its own backstory, its history. And I think that's kind of cool. And so that's the key difference between Mortal Kombat and a lot of fighting games that were released specifically at this time. Like, Ed Boon really had like a vision for what he wanted these characters to be. And that's why it, you know, apart from the fact that it was, I mean, look, it was controversial. And so because it was controversial, it became even more popular. Like, the more people complained about the game, the more kids wanted to play this game.
Yeah. You know?
And because of that, there was like animated and live action movies and TV shows and all kinds of spin-offs and a comic book series and a card game and you name it. Right, it was all over pop culture, and the thing is, it's like, it's weird because it the series is known for the high levels of bloody violence, and you know, again, once again, specifically the fatalities. And I understand that even with the new game, a lot of people think they went a little too far.
Oh yeah, there's been a couple of fatalities in Mortal Kombat 10. I've talked to Quinn about it, where I was just like, oh my god. There's some of them are just absolutely cringeworthy, but it's something that we're familiar with the entire series.
But here's the thing. My argument is, can't you turn off the fatalities and or just not execute the fatalities?
You cannot execute them. It's up to you. It's under your discretion, but...
Okay, because I haven't played the new game yet. I was told that you can actually turn it off.
No, you can't.
No. Okay. It's just a matter of hoping that your opponent doesn't give you a fatality.
Yeah.
That's different. Because if they had the option, then anyone who would be sort of like uncomfortable with the amount of violence could just turn it off. That would be something they can maybe think about doing in the future if it really bugs people.
But then it's just not Mortal Kombat anymore. I mean, that's what you're paying for in the world of Mortal Kombat nowadays anyway. It's for the bloody, the gore and the violence. I mean, if you want to sit back and not enjoy the violence, then there's other fighting games to look at too.
But it's weird because the reason why I liked Mortal Kombat so much, and I liked it just a bit more than Street Fighter, it had a slight edge. It was because I felt the characters had more combos, more moves, more special moves. Like, I mean, Scorpion was my go-to guy. You know, like, I loved every single one of Scorpion's moves. Raiden too. Like, those are the two guys I played with the most when I was a kid. And, you know, compared to like Ken, Ryu, Guile, etc. I mean, those characters were cool, but I just kind of felt like Mortal Kombat always had a slight edge in terms of like the combos that you can do. And I felt it was a lot harder to execute some of these combos as opposed to Street Fighter.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really good at Street Fighter, but I always felt the Mortal Kombat like was harder to execute some of the.
Well, it wasn't as fluid, I think. I think that was the argument.
Well, I think the thing is a lot of people used to criticize the game because they're like, well, each character has the standard, like, punch and jump and kick, mm-hmm. you know, the basic moves. I'm like, okay, but who cares? But you still have your additional moves, your special moves, you know, like what Scorpion can do, Raiden can't do, you know, mm-hmm. so on. So I'm not entirely sure how that's different than, like, Street Fighter. I never really understood that criticism.
Look, I only really, like, started to appreciate Street Fighter, like, after the release of, like, Street Fighter 4, because that's when I really started to play Street Fighter hardcore. But before Street Fighter 4, I always found that Mortal Kombat was better in terms of executing combos, special moves, and all that. Like, I just thought it looked better.
Well, it's that argument that people always have when it comes to, like, movies, TV shows, video games, is, you know, you look back at the first of its kind. And it laid the groundwork, and it was groundbreaking for the time. And then you look at what comes after, and then you compare the two. You're like, can you compare something that was released 15 years later that's following the same formula as so-and-so, but this is what started it all. So mm-hmm. what is greater? My argument is what is great will always stand the test of time. You know, mm-hmm. a great movie, be it released in 2001 or 1941, is still enjoyable to watch 2015. Mm. I think that I can go back and play Mortal Kombat and the original Street Fighter and still have fun doing so. In fact, I've done it recently. Street Fighter 4 is an amazing game, okay? But, like, the thing is that you might, of course, want to play the new version because it's faster and has better graphics and additional characters. That makes a lot of sense. Mm. The question is, can you go back and play those games, the original, and still at least have fun with what you have? And I think you can.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I think that's why, in my opinion, it is a great game. So we also want to talk about, very quickly here, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, there was a movie made about Mortal Kombat. And
There was two. Yeah.
But we are specifically going to talk about the 1995 version, mm-hmm. directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who now has a huge cult following. If you don't know, Paul W.S. Anderson directed some of the quote-unquote best video game movies. For example, a bunch of the movies in the Resident Evil franchise. And he also directed Mortal Kombat. This was his second feature film, but it was his first American Hollywood film.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, so this movie came out in 1995. The video game came out in the early 90s. I'm not entirely sure which year. It might have been 91, 92. It was a huge hit. I don't know if any of you have watched a movie recently. I know I did for the show, Aaron.
Mm.
Yeah, Quentin, like, you weren't told that we were going to review the movie, so I don't know when the last time you watched this movie was.
Oh, it's been quite a few years. But, like, I do remember catching part of it. And I even remember which scene exactly that I saw. And yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I remember it. Well, most of the big scenes, actually.
The reason why I ask is because I rewatched it two nights ago. And look, I'm not going to call this a great movie or even a good movie, but it's not a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at video game to movie adaptations, there is a lot worse than you can do. Like, like, has anyone seen House of the Dead?
No, yeah. No.
That is
one I stayed far and clear from that one.
Okay, well, we are going to review that movie in October because you got to watch
it.
You're going to die of laughter.
Oh, my God.
But the thing about this movie, it's actually not bad. Like, I'm not lying here.
It aged well. I don't know. It's still watchable today.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, it aged well in the sense that the cool thing about this movie is it didn't take itself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has, like, this campy vibe to it. And because of the tone of the film, the cheesy graphics and the dated special effects and terrible dialogue and so on and so forth doesn't really take you out of the movie, because as soon as the movie starts, you're like, okay, this is going to be some campy, cheesy adaptation of a fighting game. And it sets the tone and the rules for the universe, like, right away, that you know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And so this movie was released to, of course, negative reviews. The critics hated it, no shit.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, it was actually a huge box office success. It was number one at the box office for the first 3 weeks. The soundtrack sold platinum. The soundtrack Huge.
I actually bought it on cassette when I was a kid.
Who didn't buy this soundtrack? Yeah.
If you are a young kid listening to this podcast, back in the days they used to release audio cassettes. CDs, not MP3s that you would put into your MP3 player, audio cassettes. Yeah,
I had a Sony Walkman.
A Walkman is a device you can set into and you can listen to on the road, much like an MP3 player. Cassette.
That's true.
I feel really old.
Yeah, I know. It's just making us feel really
now,
old.
Now you have to explain this. It's like, dang.
It's because I know we actually have kids listening to our show.
Yeah. And I watched a Mortal Kombat movie on VHS when I was a kid.
VHS.
I remember actually begging my parents to pay-per-view the movie.
Oh, really? No, I remembered when I was a kid. Yeah, I actually enjoyed the movie so much that I even bought the animated movie.
Yeah, yeah.
On VHS as well.
Yeah. I saw the movie on the big screen. I saw the movie on the big screen.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm sure I saw this on the big screen. Mm. Look, the movie doesn't have an interesting plot. The plot is all whack.
there's really no plot. I mean, it's what? The six characters were in a Mortal Kombat game and they have to save the Earth realm.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I'm a huge fan of Bruce Lee, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know this, but I was watching this movie again and I'm like, holy shit. The film's framework is basically Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. Like, I'm not joking. The premise of the film is almost exactly like the premise of Enter the Dragon. You got three fighters who have to go into like this tournament, and the final battle is with this old man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost exactly like Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. And the funny thing is that one of the characters in this film, or one of the actors, I should say, looks exactly like a younger version of Bruce Lee. So the weird thing about this movie is it's PG-13. So, of course, it toned down violence, and it's very cartoonish, not like the video game. So the video game is actually a lot more bloody and violent than the actual movie. In fact, the original screenplay for the film was more faithful to the actual video game, and it had a lot more graphic violence, and it was supposed to be an R-rated movie. But, of course, the Hollywood executives and producers wanted a PG-13 movie because they wanted kids to see it so they can make a shitload of money at the box office, which of course they did. I mean, I'm just trying to remember the actual like plot. I mean, I just watched this movie and it's not that I can't remember, it's just there really isn't much to it.
It was messy.
Completely messy. It's like Raiden shows up and he selects selects Sonya Blade, Liu Kang, and Johnny Cage. Those are his three fighters that he wants to take to the tournament. So you got Liu Kang, he's an ex-monk who wants to avenge his brother's death. Johnny Cage is a Hollywood actor. He wants to prove that he's not a quote-unquote fake because people think he's fake and he can't actually fight in his movies. He has a stunt double. And then you got Sonya, who I think is like a special forces officer. I'm not entirely sure what her passion is.
Well, she's a special forces officer whose task is to get or kill Kano, and she just ends up following him on the boat on their way to the tournament.
Yes, that was the scene that I saw.
Yeah, that's basically her story. Like, she wasn't actually chosen. She just so happened to have walked into the tournament. Sort of like a stowaway.
No, but there were scenes in which she's training and stuff. Like, she was part of Raiden's crew. Before the accident.
Yeah, once she was on the island, she had no choice. But in fact, in the beginning of the movie, she's just... Well, let's just say like Kano baited Sonya to get on the boat to go into the tournament.
So basically, the movie's plot revolves around the typical bad action B-movie gimmick that revolves around a fighting tournament. And the funny... I won't even say funny thing. The kind of disappointing thing about the movie, watching it again nowadays, is I don't care how dated the CGI is. I don't care how wooden the dialogue is. I don't care how silly the actual plot is. What I find disappointing was the actual fight sequences. Like, there's only one character, one actor in this movie that actually knows martial arts. That's it. Like, I'm not joking. Liu Kang, the guy who plays Liu.
Yeah, Robin Shu.
Like, I don't think anyone...
That is true. He's the only one that has, like, martial arts background.
Like, he is the only one who actually knows how to do martial arts. So you get, like, set piece after set piece, but clearly they have stunt doubles, but even the stunt doubles aren't very well-versed in the art of martial arts. and...
Well, except for Scorpion and Sub-Zero, those two were actual martial artists, too. Yeah. I mean, thank God the Liu Kang and Sub-Zero fight was probably
the best fight sequence by far. Yeah.
But you didn't like the one with Johnny Cage and Scorpion? That was pretty good, too.
Actually, no, it's good. Like, there's two great fight sequences in this movie. When you think back on old Jean-Claude Van Damme films and or Jackie Chan or Jet Donnie Yen, like, it doesn't care. Like, you get two great fight sequences and that's it. And you get a lot of, like, really ham-fisted dialogue and wooden deliveries and just weirdness, and you get CGI Goro with his four arms, which actually looks good, by the way.
Yeah,
Goro looks really good.
Yeah, he looks good.
And then, of course, the silliest character in this film is Raiden, played by Christopher Lambert. Every time he pops up on screen, I start laughing my ass off. Christopher Lambert of Highlander series. If you never watched Highlander, watch Highlander 3. It's one of the worst but funniest movies ever made. Like, you'll fall off the couch laughing hysterically. It's so bad, but so good. But he is so terrible in this movie. So terrible, but...
Well, he was... The entire time I remember, I was thinking, I'm like, he must not be taking his role very seriously, though. It was, I mean, like, for a thunder god, you know, he's too whimsical.
I read a review that compared him to, actually, it wasn't even comparison. It was saying that, I pulled it up here. Christopher Lambert looks like a cross between a white bread Jesus and Steve Martin having a bad hair day. Okay. That is the best way to describe him.
Yeah.
He's terrible. Like, he looks so silly. Like, it's not just his performance. Like, clearly he's never even played the game or realizes that he's in a movie that's adapted from a fighting game, like a popular fighting game. Like, I don't... Maybe he thought it was a movie adaptation of, like, some famous novel or something, because he's taking it so seriously. Like, everyone else around him is just having fun, and this guy is so dead serious, and that's the problem with him, but that's what makes it so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a one-of-a-kind, that guy, Christopher Lambert.
Well, he is the one.
Yeah. And
that was my Highlander reference. <the day. laughs> But anyway, you know what? Compared to other, like, video game movie adaptations, comparably to Street Fighter, I thought Mortal Kombat was a lot better.
Yeah, it really set the, like, if.
At least,
and you didn't know the storyline of Mortal Kombat, the movie pretty much, like...
I think if there's one... Despite, like, it might not be such a good movie, but I felt like, as a fan of Mortal Kombat, like, it still remained pretty faithful to the game at the time.
It still does, to this day. Like, it does. Like, I mean, I really do think that this is a good movie. Like, it's not a great movie... But it's not bad. Like, people say it's bad. It's actually kind of, like, fun and good. And, I mean, I really like the way Scorpion looks. I love the way Sub-Zero looks. We don't get a lot of Sub-Zero, which is kind of disappointing. You know, I remember that was, like, my biggest disappointment when I first watched the movie as a kid. Mm-hmm. But he looks good. You get Reptile. He looks great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was so pleasantly surprised. Like, I could still remember my experience watching it. As a kid, like, at the theater, the first time I saw a Reptile, I was like, oh my god, Reptile's in this movie. Like, they actually know Reptile. because like, for those who don't know, in the Mortal Kombat, like, the original Mortal Kombat game, like, Reptile was a secret character. And they sort of kept with that same formula as well in the movie. Like, he just shows up as, like, some kind of bonus secret character in the movie.
Yeah, that's why they didn't give him a lot of screen time, because in the game he's a hidden character. So they included him in the movie. Sort of like, it's not really an Easter egg, but kind of like sort of like an Easter egg, like putting this, like, cameo appearance from this, like, villain that not a lot of people even know exist in the video game, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, at the time, that's kind of like a cool thing to do. Looking back on it, you're like, well, why does Sub-Zero only have like 5 minutes? But I knew about Sub-Zero, the hidden character, so I remember when I went to go see the movie, I was sort of disappointed that there wasn't a lot of Sub-Zero. But you're right, yeah. But once again, like Paul W.S. Anderson, he's made some of the best video game adaptations. Like, if anyone's going to direct a video game adaptation, he should be at the top of the list because he knows what he's doing. Like, he's like sort of like Michael Bay, but in my opinion, better than Michael Bay, because both Paul W.S. Anderson and Michael Bay aren't really interested in story. You know, they're interested in the action, the fight choreography, the look of the film, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is that he seems to have like this passion and love for the medium. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he himself is a big time gamer, because he's made a lot of these video game to movie adaptations. So, and he clearly has some sort of like love for the characters in this movie. Like, you know, even when he pokes fun at these characters, even like the Resident Evil series, like, you could just tell that he's trying his best. And maybe he's not the best storyteller, but he's still a good director, you know, and there's a difference.
He respects the material or the source that it comes from. That's what I felt out of him.
Just a bit of quick trivia. Okay, first of all, Steven Spielberg, he's actually an avid fan of video games. I don't know if you guys know this. He wanted to be in this movie. He wanted to have a cameo appearance in this movie. And he was going to have a cameo appearance in this movie, but there was some sort of like scheduling conflict, so it never happened. Yeah. Do you know who was originally supposed to be cast in this movie?
To play who?
Well, first of all, Brandon Lee. He was supposed to have been cast in this film, but he was killed in the filming of The Crow. Otherwise, he would have been the star of Mortal Kombat. But
would he play Liu Kang?
Yeah, he was supposed to play Liu Kang.
Yeah.
But Tom Cruise and Johnny Depp also took interest in the film back in the day. And Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be in it. So originally it was supposed to be Van Damme and Brandon Lee. But do you know why Van Damme turned it down?
Well, because he did Street Fighter before this, no?
He did Street Fighter, So he had to choose between Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, and he chose Street Fighter because he liked the character of Guile better.
I like Quentin's sigh.
The strangest casting decision, not that they actually went with her, but it was supposed to be Cameron Diaz, who was supposed to play Sonya. But what happened was, I think she broke her wrist or something happened, and she couldn't actually end up filming, so she dropped out. So there you have it. Mortal Kombat. So if you haven't watched the movie, I'll be honest, I've never seen the second film. I've only seen the next.
Oh, you have not seen the second one? You're not missing anything. The second one is so much more worse than the first one.
I remember seeing the second one in the movie theater, and I wasn't too pleased.
This
was when I was younger.
But honestly, if you haven't seen the 1995 Mortal Kombat movie, do yourself a favor and check it out. If you're listening to this podcast, it means you're a big-time gamer and you have to see this movie, because it's one of the best. Like, I wouldn't say it's the best. I'm a huge fan of Silent Hill. And some of the Resident Evil movies aren't bad, but this is, I think, on the top five.
I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, in terms of, like, movie license or video game, you know, like, it's one of the top.
Yeah, for the longest time, I looked at, like, the Mortal Kombat movie adaption as, like, the best video game to movie adaption until I saw Resident Evil. So.
All right. So, just to end off our podcast here, who's your favorite character in the Mortal Kombat series? Quentin?
I would say Scorpion or Sector.
Aaron?
Sub-Zero. All the way.
And me, it's Scorpion and Sub-Zero, which I guess puts us with a tie. Scorpion and Sub-Zero, two best characters. I honestly think that's accurate. Like, I think they're the two most popular, if anything.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're like the Ryu and Ken of Street Fighter.
All right, well, Quentin, thank you so much for coming on our show and replacing Tim, who couldn't make it this week. Where can we find you online?
You could find me on Twitter. Posting news articles from the FTW Gaming podcast website. And I'm on Twitter. I'm all over Twitter.
We just need to know your Twitter handle.
Oh, yeah.
your Twitter handle.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at IQTheTruthMTL. And yeah.
Cool. And Aaron, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at TheTermless6, and you can also catch me hosting the FTW Gaming Podcast with Quentin.
All right, and you can find me online on Twitter, Sound on Site, on Facebook. You can find us also. Do like our page. Follow us on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
We will be back next week, and we will finally review Super Mario 64. Thank you for listening.
They are calling it the hottest, most successful fighting game of all time. Mortal Kombat 3, and this is what it looks like. Yep, and some of that was blood flying there. Now with us tonight is the creator of the Mortal Kombat videos, Ed Boon, who is sitting right next to me, and John Tobias. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, as these things evolve, parents are getting a bit concerned because they get more and more graphic, and they are accusing you, or at least other critics as well, that you're marketing gratuitous violence with real no end in sight. I mean, the games do nothing except sit there and you watch people die. Are you?
Absolutely not. I mean, what we provide is a form of entertainment in the form of a video game. The violent aspect of the video game is, you know, is a minor aspect in the overall scheme of the game itself. The players, I think, are aware of that. We're aware of that. Maybe somebody looking on the outside, unfamiliar with the game itself.
What do kids learn, Mr. Boone, out of this? What do they learn?
There's no learning value. It's just like any other form of entertainment. There's mm-hmm. just you go there to have fun, and you go there to play the game. Most of the people who critics of the game haven't even played the game, and they don't realize that exactly what points of the game there's violent aspects of it.
We see kids looking at violent, increasingly violent movies. They see a lot of violence in the news. They see a lot of violence on TV. Why do they need more of it? I mean, are you concerned at all that they're being overexposed to violence with perhaps the idea or the residual effect being that they become desensitized to watching people die because all they have to do is push a button and it starts again?
There's a lot of parallels, exactly like you said, with movies. And that's why a couple of years ago there was a rating system that our industry kind of came up with, similar to the rating systems that you have in movies. And that provides parents and other, you know, players, for instance, the knowledge they need as to the content of the game. And they can make their own decisions as to whether they feel that's appropriate.
Is there going to be a Mortal Kombat 4? And will you ever draw the line where you say it's too violent?
Yeah, there's of course we're going to draw the line. Okay. Certainly, yeah.
Chance of handling your new 12-inch long playing records, and I would like to see you again.